What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA. This is episode number 156. I am Jared here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada. Today, we're going to be talking all about Francis Ngannou's shocking, maybe not so shocking, exit from the UFC. We're going to be talking about the John Jones versus Ciryl Gane fight announcement. And we're going to be taking a look ahead to the big UFC 283 fight card with its two title fights on top. And we're just going to have to talk about Dana White slapping his wife. Before we get to all that fight and the fight drama, you know what time it is, though. Grab your weed, fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week.
All right. So today, we have a few different styles. So we got a nice little joint here, some ice cream cake. We'll get to that in a second. But first, I have this little cartridge with some blue raspberry from Secret Orchard.
Secret Orchard. I keep seeing these in the dispensary out here. The little fruit-covered box. If you're looking on YouTube where you can see video, you might see it around town. What do you think about this thing, man? Blue raspberry. All these things have flavor names, yeah, but they don't always hold up.
Yeah, definitely holds up flavor-wise. Looking at about 88% THC.
Dude, the flavor on this is amazing. It tastes like a blueberry to me. I mean, blue raspberry is a fictitious thing.
Yeah.
But this tastes just like blueberry, which, dude, a lot of times vape pens taste like shit. The THC ones, you know. I'm curious. I don't know if they're adding flavor to this. I don't see anything. If they're getting this with their terpene blend.
Yeah, but the level of terpenes that are pumped into these, it's definitely coming from terpenes. So it's 32.9 I guess it would be milligrams of limonene, and then 18.7 milligrams of beta, whatever the fuck.
Beta-mercine.
So there has to be some effects from, you know.
It's got to be. It's really delicious, man. So kudos to Select Orchard. Really, we are enjoying this vape cartridge here. And what's up with the weed today?
So today also in the joint there, we do have some ice cream cake. One of my favorite strains. It is a cross of wedding cake with gelato 33. Ice cream cake always has like a real smooth, like, smoke to it. It's very, very rare you're going to get a harsh taste from this strain.
I'm not going to lie, dude. This bag, it smells sweet and cakey.
Yeah.
I mean, this bud looks great, dude.
Like, you can tell when it burns. Just like has like a smooth like taste to it. It comes in about 22% THC, which is pretty nice as well. But yeah, that's what we're smoking on today.
It's frosty looking too. That's delicious. It smells great. We got this little bong loaded up over here too. Man, I gotta clean this thing. Look at it.
It's a little not too bad. Mine are pretty rough. About to have a cleaning day. I went to Walmart last week and got fucking five things of 91% alcohol. So I'm about to fucking move all my bongs over and fucking clean them bitches all at once.
I'm going to buy some of that Formula 702, which is made by Formula 420.
Yeah.
I wasn't a big fan of the Formula 420 products.
710 one is better.
Sure. Yeah, or the 710, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's the one for oil, and it works good for cleaning, like, your dab rigs, obviously, but cleaning your bongs and your pipes, too. It's just a really high concentrate of orange oil inside there, so it's natural too, which I like better than, you know, shoving a lot of chemicals into my fucking pipe.
I feel
you
that.
Worry about residue left over and shit, right?
Yeah.
So I like that. I'm gonna buy some of that myself. You know, they weren't sponsoring my other channel, but they had sent me a bunch of free stuff in the mail for the LVME YouTube channel.
Yeah.
So I had a bunch of their products for a while. And I liked them, but I got to get some of that myself.
Yeah, I kind of go back and forth with it because, like, I like those ones, but I feel like it's a lot more work to get, like, some of the, like, cleaner, not cleaner, but the more dirty spots in some of your pieces.
See, I just soak. I had so much of it. Like if I had this one, I would just fucking fill it to the top and soak it.
I feel that.
You know what I mean? I'd probably take half the bottle, but I have, like, five.
So. Yeah. Okay. See, I tried to do it the quickest way. I'm kind of dangerous when I do it. You're really not supposed to, you know, like, put it in your microwave. And sometimes I'll do that just because, you know, it's a little hot. I mean, sometimes it'll light up and you put it in there and it's, like, scares the shit out of you. But like, all you gotta do is blow it out. Well, yeah, it's okay. Very dangerous, though. I know the dangers of it.
Yeah, we're not advocating that.
I'm not advocating that whatsoever. Yes. I'm just
purely simply, a hypothetical.
Yes, yeah, I don't even do that.
Jesus, Paul.
The kids.
Oh, damn. It didn't even register.
It did not. No.
We need a new damn button. All right, well, we should fire up this joint, man, and let's move on. Yeah. I mean, the big news that broke over this past weekend with the UFC.
I broke that news.
I know, you did send me the picture. Did you take that photo?
No, I was on my phone. He was like, is this happening? I was like, what?
Okay, fuck? So one of Paul's friends, you know, obviously, folks, we live in Vegas, and one of Paul's friends was driving by with us,
yeah,
MGM,
he works at,
right?
MGM.
Yeah, he works at MGM, and he saw the sign that they had blasted on the side,
the
which T-Mobile showed
arena.
On T-Mobile, it showed Ciryl Gane versus John Jones.
Yeah,
and he sends it to Paul. He's like, "What the fuck is this?" And then a little while after that, the story breaks. Like somebody at MGM fucked up. They weren't supposed to show that at T-Mobile, and it kind of forced Dana White's hand. Now, this hasn't been confirmed by Dana White, but I think it's pretty obvious that that's what happened here. I do not believe that on the heels of this really lame overall fight night on ESPN, they were looking to break the massive news of both Ngannou leaving and John Jones fighting for a world championship. Don't think that was how they wanted to break it, but they didn't really have any choice after it's blasted on the side of T-Mobile Arena and then it starts making its way all across social media.
Yeah.
So that's what happens. He comes out, Dana White comes out after Strickland wins against Imanov, which was just whatever. He gets that, and then Dana comes out and says, Ngannou is released. Let's focus on that portion first, and then we'll talk about the Jones fight initially.
Yeah.
So he comes out and says, not only is Ngannou released, but he is released from the matching period as well, and he is a 100% free agent.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different layers to this, obviously, and this is something that's been going on for at least about over a almost 2 years at this point.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like it's a real like weird split for the UFC because I do think it's kind of a smear on their name that they have an active champion walking away from their organization. I do think that's they should feel some sort of shame for that
you
they could not come
so.
To a deal.
Well, let's look at that a little bit. I think that the thing that really held it up, and we don't have this confirmed yet, but for me, in my opinion, it's the boxing aspect of it that Ngannou was, if you listen to him in interviews, he's very focused on this. And it's not just the talk. You hear that from a lot of fighters. Say, but wait, Jared, all these fighters say they want to box. Well, no, actually, Ngannou first started training in combat sports because at 22 he wanted to box.
Yeah.
He moved to Paris. Everybody knows his story. And everything he sacrificed, he moved there to learn to box.
Yeah.
Then he started training, boxing, and was a boxer in training when the coach at the gym, Fernando Lopez, I believe is his first
name, Ferdinand
Lopez, convinces him to do MMA instead. And now we see what happens. Okay, so now here's Francis. So when he says he wants to box, it's not just like he wants his payday that everybody's talking about, oh, we'll fight Jake Paul. No, this motherfucker means he's wanted to box for like the past 15 years. Which meant as a kid, he wanted to box.
Yeah.
And as soon as he was financially in a position to be able to train somewhere, which he was barely was able to do that. I mean, it's just a deal worked out with Lopez, honestly. But that's what he was doing. So I don't think this is just the fleeting fancy of all MMA fighters here.
So this is kind of where our opinions differ. I think he's still going to be on the MMA route of things. I think the fact that he has not necessarily changed training camps, he's still training here in Vegas at an MMA gym, like in like the point that he really hasn't like verbalized how he's like necessarily training as a boxer or in a boxing gym 24/7 now versus MMA. I do think that just means that he's waiting out and he's going to take the best deal possible.
I do concede that's a valid point. And honestly, to further back up that point, it's to his disadvantage that Tyson Fury is getting ready to finalize the deal with Usyk.
Yeah.
It's to our advantage as fans of that, but there was a lot of heat behind the two of them doing some sort of exhibition. Now, I think that's still on the table, but it's not going to be the first thing that he waltzes into.
And then remember, that was going to be like a weird hybrid bout, too. They were going to like box with UFC gloves.
Yeah, it was going to be pretty wild.
So
Francis could, what else could he do? He could go to the PFL. MMA Fighting was putting some posts up about Francis to the PFL. Now, I don't think so, because their $1 million payday, that's really not that. That's about what he was getting in UFC.
But
I mean, yeah, you can add sponsors there, but really at PFL?
Yeah, but here's the thing, too. I do think it could be a scenario where they have all this financial backing from celebrities and all these different things in which they have gained in the last, 2 years, that there are some financial things that could be promised within that contract that could sweeten the deal.
It could be. Well, what about Bellator? Now, Bellator doesn't have... they're paying good. I mean, look at what happened with AJ McKee recently, re-signing with Bellator because, frankly, they pay more than the UFC. But what Bellator does offer, which I think has more value than PFL offering about the same thing, is the chance for sponsorships.
Few more eyes.
And if he were to, say, sign a major deal with someone like a Nike, where he's getting paid, $10 mil.
Yeah.
That changes the game completely.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's not earning that money from Bellator per se, but he's earning it because of Bellator. The UFC would never let him do such a thing. So there is that possibility as well. I think those are the only two. Well, what about Japan? There's Risen. There's One.
One is, and if you really look at it, I think One is the way to go. One can pay you what the UFC is paying you and then some. One is definitely the biggest, like, people can say whatever they want to say, but person for person, sales, viewership, social media, and everything involved, One championship is more popular than the UFC.
Yeah, that's the thing a lot of people don't know. It's because we live in America, and the UFC is the biggest deal in America.
Yeah.
But globally, One is crushing the UFC viewership-wise.
Viewership-wise.
Now, their profitability,
their
social, probably not, according
their social
to their
media account
report,
is bigger than the NBA and MLB combined.
Yeah.
That's fucking stupid. Like, stupid big. So, my point being is just that the UFC can try to play big dog on the fucking field, but at the end of the day, One can offer him everything that the UFC can. And I think where Bellator may have an angle, and I kind of talked about this before the show, and I think it's kind of something funny, but it's kind of true, is Bellator has Fedor Emelianenko, and they could make Fedor's final fight of his career be against Francis Ngannou. How fucked up that would be? Really bad. But that would sell.
It would be a possibility, though.
It would be huge. Like, it would sell so easily. I think Francis could easily shine in Bellator. I think if he was fighting Ryan Bader, that would kind of sell, too.
Let's finish up with the boxing aspect, because we're talking about all the different options that he has. And circling back to the boxing, there's more than just Tyson Fury with that exhibition fight. He could very well become a professional fighter and just fight a low-level journeyman-type fighter and see if he can't get a victory. It won't be the payday he wants to, but a victory could certainly lead to a higher payday and a higher-profile fight against maybe a Deontay Wilder, maybe an Andy Ruiz, something like that.
See,
I think some people would be interested in that. I think it's a possibility.
I think it's a possibility, but I do think there's some things within that scenario that I don't necessarily think line up for Francis. Because I think based on how his name is right now, even if he does enter the boxing community, there is no scenario where he does not jump the queue and fight some of the bigger names.
Yeah, he's like the reigning UFC champion. The UFC can say whatever, they stripped him this or that. He didn't get beat in the cage.
Yeah, no. And that's my point.
He's the baddest man on the planet.
Like, there's not very many middle-of-the-line journeyman boxers I can think of that anybody would give a fuck to see him fight.
I think that's more of a remote possibility than a higher-profile fight. But the thing is, would you want to risk a higher-profile bout if it means losing the possibility of a massive payday against Tyson Fury, even if it's in an exhibition? Who knows? Because if he loses, there goes that.
But if you think that you can beat Tyson Fury, you better fucking believe you better think you can beat some journeyman. You know what I mean? Like,
Well, I think that rounding this out, let's go with MMA. What do you think the most likely promotion he winds up in MMA is? Because they could be a promotion that allows him to do other things as well. Bellator don't care if you box.
Yeah.
Scott Coker let him go box whoever he wants.
Yeah. From the top to the bottom. You know what I mean? Yeah, I don't know. I think Bellator makes a lot of sense. I think it's going to come down to Bellator 1.
I think if he goes with MMA, it'll be Bellator. And I think that they'll probably allow him to box. But there's actually one other promotion here. People might scoff when I first say this. But they're about to come into some serious dough. And they already have some serious dough behind them. And that's kind of what Francis is about right now, is a payday. And so don't laugh when I say the BKFC.
I'm not laughing. I'm laughing at the idea of Francis Ngannou putting his hands on somebody with no fucking gloves on.
Can you imagine? He could waltz right into a title shot. Okay, they're about to have the heavyweight championship. And it is not... David Feldman's about to have that money where he could be like, we'll give you a $5 million base pay and X off the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And they could do it because they're about to have crazy dumb Triller cash.
Yeah.
And Triller is known for doing crazy dumb shit with their cash. Now, that's not a shade at the BKFC. I'm just saying it's not like they're giving them $1 million here. That's the type of splash a fledgling, younger, growing promotion like BKFC could really use. I mean, could you fucking imagine?
Bro.
So I think it's not nearly as likely as any of these other scenarios, but I don't think that that's off the table. Because it fulfills some of Francis's desires to use his hands and his hands only. Dude. And it could be stupid money.
Dude, Francis would kill someone in a bare-knuckle fight. Imagine getting hit by Francis as hard as he hits with no gloves on, dude.
Alan Belcher is about to fight for the heavyweight championship. Let's just say he wins. Can you imagine Alan Belcher
with his Francis Ngannou?
Versus Francis Ngannou in a bare-knuckle?
Or even worse, think if... You know, we got to I just don't feel like there's any heavyweights that are in bare knuckle that are Francis's size and, like,
there's Greg Hardy, supposedly.
Imagine Francis Ngannou versus Greg Hardy. Greg Hardy.
Frank Mir doesn't seem to be sticking in there, but he's that size.
Yeah.
Todd Duffy. You could almost see someone like David Feldman with the position BKFC is in right now, almost willing to bet the bank on that because he's thinking just like we are, most likely this guy's going to come in and win the title. And could he get...
You'd have to give him an immediate title shot.
Dude, could he get any bigger than if Francis Ngannou left the UFC, the reigning champion, went to BKFC and became their champ? The press that BKFC would get off that, you couldn't fucking buy it.
Yeah.
You could not buy that press.
Yeah.
And so it's not crazy to think he might make a move on it.
But that's
even at more money, you might offer him $10 million.
It's a dangerous game you play, though. Because what you're going to do is gain Francis Ngannou, but also gain the UFC as a direct competitor.
Not really. I mean, they're two different sports.
I think so. Not even that. I'm saying the way Dana White does business and the way Dana White does business in the media... If Francis then goes and signs with Bare Knuckle, he will attempt to drag the Bare Knuckle FC's name in the mud as much as he can. Because that's how Dana White does things.
Yeah, he tried, back in the day, though, with them. Like, it didn't work when they were, like, in their 10.
Yeah, though, I'm not saying it's necessarily going to affect them or not.
I don't think that's
I'm just saying, in general, that the UFC and Dana White, at the point that they're in right now, are very much in the point of, like, attempting to smear other like products' name to build theirs up. Because if you look at even what they did to Francis in this whole thing that is all transpired over these last 2 years, has never once been the ability to lift Francis up and make him a bigger commodity and then show him where he's at. But more try to tear him down and be like, psh, we're not paying you $10 million.
Same shit to George.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like he does that kind of shit.
Let's not worry about Dana. Let's just focus on it. Like, I don't think that would stop David Philbin if they're going to piss Dana off. Like, who fucking cares? Like,
it
would be the biggest thing that could happen for them.
Yeah.
Their heavyweight title fight, like, we'll know if this is even a remote possibility because their heavyweight championship bout is Arnold Adams versus Alan Belcher on February 24th.
Yeah.
And if there's any possibility of that happening, we'd know if Francis were to mention it to be there. If Feldman were to mention something like we're going to make a play for him. Again, I'm saying it's pretty minor, but it's not off the table at all.
It's off the table, yeah, no. I don't think anything's off the table with Francis because there's so many different avenues and so many different major organizations right now that can offer big money like that.
Right.
I feel like the UFC is still caught in the Stone Age where they feel like nobody can give the money that they can give. It's like, no, dude, there's so many fucking different organizations with so many weird like contracts backing them, which where their like viewership really doesn't matter. Like, you know what I mean? Like PFL, their viewership doesn't really fucking matter because they have a major fucking deal with ESPN where ESPN is paying to put their shit on. The same thing the UFC has done is the same deal, similar, not obviously on the same magnitude or anything of the UFC's, right, but have a similar like model where their bills are paid before they put the shows on. Like, that's where they're at now. You know what I mean? So, like, a run at Francis, they can put a bunch of packages together. Bellator has Showtime behind them at this point. So they're getting promoted by Showtime and all this shit. So I'm guaranteed there's some dough in Scott Coker's pocket that he could throw at them.
Scott Coker's championship. Got that Viacom money.
Yeah, one championship, but same thing. They just signed that major deal with fucking TNT. And then Amazon. Right after that, they did Amazon. So, like, they're also gaining all these, like, different, you know, promotional deals.
Right.
They
Amazon
have the money
to
throw.
Are streaming companies that are worldwide, too. So they're looking at one's numbers and being like,
yeah,
you want
they
on
have
that.
The money to throw at Francis Ngannou. The UFC is so stupid that they think that they're, just because maybe, like, in some people's eyes, they are the premier organization, they are not necessarily the premier organization financially when it comes to what they can offer fighters. Everyone can offer what they offer fighters.
Pretty much. Now let's. My last comments on this are: I'm not surprised. You could go back in our show. This is basically exactly what I thought would happen: was Francis would leave, and Dana White would shit on him on the way out the door, and then they would use his departure as a way to lift the Jon Jones title fight.
Yep.
What I didn't expect was the opponent that we're getting here.
Yeah.
I'm shocked by this opponent because, outside of Ciryl Gane fans, nobody fucking cares, man. I'm excited to see Jon Jones fight. Who Ciryl Gane? You couldn't get Stipe?
Yeah.
Stipe has
name value, legacy value.
Legacy.
So much.
He's I don't understand. This is fucking a terrible fight in my eyes. I don't get it. Like, because, dude, he just got out-wrestled by Francis Ngannou, who's got some of the worst wrestling in the heavyweight division, and his knee was blown out.
Yeah.
Like, no shade on Francis there, but I'm just saying, he's
Francis
not known
has
for
made
his wrestling.
But he's never been, like, naturally a wrestler.
The fuck? And he fucking worked this dude over. John's going to murder him with that shit. You see how big he is? I'm going to pick this dude up, slam him down, fucking sit on him. Make him his
bitch. Predict that John is going to do something very similar to what he did to Alexander Gustafsson to Ciryl Gane. I think
that
he,
KO?
Yeah, I think what he's going to end up doing is Gane's going to try to, you know, kind of win the game on the feet, and then Jones is going to sit back and just wait for the moment to open, and then when it does, take him down and just pound his face into the ground. And Ciryl Gane's not going to be able to do anything about it.
I'm just not on it, man. I'm not on it. I don't feel it. I'm excited to see John, but I mean, look at their resumes, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I don't understand why everybody is thinking that this is the guy to beat Jon Jones. Like, he's good. It's not like he's terrible.
I don't want to shit on Ciryl Gane, but Ciryl Gane has also been a pawn in the UFC's game and for a while here now. So when you go back and you look at what happened with Francis Ngannou, Ciryl Gane was put into an interim title fight with Derek Lewis where he wins that and then forces Francis Ngannou into a title fight when he had an injury and he knew he needed to get surgery and his contract was coming up and there was all this shit where pretty much Francis Ngannou bet on himself, ends up beating Ciryl Gane. And don't get me wrong, if I'm Ciryl Gane, I'm taking all these fights. He's not the problem here. But the UFC continuously has used Ciryl Gane to play their game for them. And now you get to the Tai Tuivasa fight, where Tai Tuivasa was pretty much a fight away from the title, and they needed a ledger to see really how good he was. And they put him into a Ciryl Gane, and he ends up losing to him. And then now you get to the Jones fight, where now this should have been Stipe, this should have been Francis. They don't play ball. The UFC did exactly what they did to Francis, and now they're doing it to Stipe. And the fact of, okay, if you don't play game, then we have Ciryl Gane, who
move right onto this guy and say yes to anything. And again, yes, it's not his fault. But I want to look at the resumes here, though. Yeah. I get it. He's saying yes. It's cool. Well, he'd be a retard to say no.
No, I'm just saying the UFC has used him constantly.
I'm talking he has no chance. Yeah. Why people think there's a lot of people online in the MMA sphere that think this is the guy to beat Jon Jones. They were calling for this because he's going to fuck up Jon Jones. No. Where have you seen that?
Yeah.
He's supposed to beat Derek Lewis.
Yeah.
Ciryl Gane was an undefeated Muay Thai kickboxer as well. He's levels above Derek striking. Derek, I love him. He wins because he's got crazy stupid power.
Yeah.
And he can fucking hang in there. Mm-hmm. Right? He's supposed to win that fight.
Well, and if
he beats Volkov by decision, okay, whatever. Rosenstruck by decision. Okay, I mean, whatever. He TKOs Junior Dos Santos after hitting him on the back of the head. Junior Dos Santos way past the fucking hill anyways.
Yeah.
I mean, these are okay. These are not great, terrible victories.
Yeah.
Before that, he took Tanner Bowser to a decision. And I don't care. His fucking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fights before that don't even count.
Yeah.
They're against nobody's, I don't know, in Quebec?
Yeah.
Uruguay? Well, Singapore?
And that's the thing, too, is like a lot of these wins that Gane has had is against other strikers that were just not on his level. John has defeated
everybody.
He's beat everybody in it, all varying skill sets.
All skill sets.
Yeah.
He's beat former champions, prior champions, current champions, Daniel Cormier twice, Fuck the Metabolite.
Gustafson twice. Like, don't even get me started about his earlier
Vitor,
career.
Rashad, Loyota, Jackson, Hua, Bader, Medeshenko, Brandon Vera. Brandon Vera just retired as the goddamn, like the other day, he was still the one champ for a grip.
Glover,
the current champ.
Yeah.
I mean, he's beaten literally everybody from every style. What is it that you've seen from Ciryl that makes you think he's the one to beat Jon Jones? And that's what I'm talking about. The guy's a good fighter.
Yes.
I'm talking about Jon Jones here.
I'm gonna
shut up about his personal life.
Yeah.
Talking
about fighting, yeah. And I'll play devil's advocate just for fun. Yeah. I think people's biggest questions when it comes to Jon Jones is his ability to stay in the mix. Yeah, the personal life shit, whatever. But I think what we have seen a little bit, and I don't think it's necessarily true, but has become the narrative within John's career, that in his last 4 fights, that he looked like he had took a bit of a step back and wasn't necessarily that same Jon Jones. He always has flashes of the old Jon Jones and have had, but he seems to have coasted in his last 4 fights, where he's had not the greatest performances, but not performances that can necessarily be seen as bad.
We're talking
or anything.
Dominic Reyes,
we're talking about Dominic Reyes, Thiago
Santos,
Anthony Smith.
The Gustafson KO.
Yeah, the Gustafson KO was great. But the Smith, Santos, and Reyes fight, I think we saw a version of Jon Jones that was playing it a lot more safe and was a lot more uninterested.
Yeah, he lost the fire for what he was doing.
And then he also has had the scenario with his gym. Where is he training right now? Is he?
He's still with Gibson.
He's with Gibson,
he's with
but
the same
he got
team
kicked
minus
out of Jackson.
Well, yes and no. He got kicked out of Jackson's, yes, but he also took all the coaches except that other dude, Winklejohn, all still training.
That other dude, too.
They just train at his
place.
What's
the other one that was fucking trying to smear him online and shit? The kickboxing coach?
John Winklejohn.
No, Winklejohn, and there's another one, too, who was, used to be a fighter. That was,
yeah. I can't.
So, that all is, happened within the gym, too. So, I don't think there's major questions or anything. I'm just trying to play a little bit of, what has kind of been, has kind of been the narrative a little that people have pushed online that, John's, whole thing with the camp and then, his last 4 fights and has he took a step back. And then you look at Ciryl Gane, outside of that Francis fight, his performances have been pretty impressive.
Dude, he's like, good. I don't want to be misunderstood. Yeah, I'm just saying, we're talking about him fighting John Jones.
No, we're talking about him fighting.
I mean, if John wasn't coming up, he'd have a solid chance to win the title.
Yeah.
But I mean, dude, I'm just saying, I see nothing that fucks with John Jones.
I think Ciryl Gane's a tough fight for everyone who's not named John Jones, a heavyweight.
This is going to be a John that's coming back that has the fire that John Jones used to have. He's way bigger. It's a whole new game. I think he understands that. He's an extremely intelligent fighter.
Yeah.
He's bulked up the right way. It's been years. He's massive.
And it's not like crazy for him to get that big. His two brothers are freaking huge, too. His brother's like 6'5", 300 pounds. His other brother's a fucking like 6'3", like 275. Yeah, one's an offensive like tackle, one's a DN. Right now, like,
yeah.
And Jones is like 255. He's the smallest of his brothers. Like, you know what I mean?
It's almost like he's out here roiding up and going crazy.
Well, no, I'm just saying he has the – because of who his brothers are, he also has within a handshake's reach of – any of the top trainers in the United States. When you're an NFL football player, there's people who approach you that can help you gain, you know, speed, size, and like, you know, a lot of the physical like aspects of like athletic performance. John has those outlets at just like, you know, with a phone call. And I think that's what people don't understand about him putting this size on. People keep questioning, will he be able to have that same gas tank? Will he be as fast? Will he be all this, all that? This dude is training with some of the top guys in the world putting this weight on. He didn't just, like, you know, do what Israel Adesanya did when he fought light heavyweight. And just like, I'm just going to train the same and, you know, let the chips fall where they may. Like, John has been nothing but focused on being, like, the ultimate version of John Jones in the last, like, 2 years, and I think that is going to be shown in this fight.
He's heard all the criticism.
Yeah, I played the criticism card for a second, but I just honestly, truly think John's going to destroy him.
He's going to murder him.
It's going to be bad, yeah.
We'll talk about it more as it gets here, but that kind of wraps the whole for now.
Yeah.
There'll be more to talk about because this is an ongoing story, but let's look ahead now. We've got a pay-per-view coming up, finally, that's pretty decent.
Yep.
I wasn't that stoked about the original main event. I think this one's much better. Sucks Yuri had to get hurt like that. But we do have UFC 283, headlined by Glover Teixeira versus Jamahal Hill for the vacant light heavyweight title. Also headlined by the fourth, Brandon Moreno versus Davison Figueiredo,
who will
undoubtedly fight to a draw. And in case you didn't know, Brandon Moreno is actually the first Mexican-born UFC champion. Look, dude, I only say that because the UFC is incapable of saying his name without filling that part in afterwards. It's kind of funny.
When we get to that fight, I have some information that might make some bad things for Brandon Moreno. But
we got Gilbert Burns on this card fighting Neil Magny. We got Lauren Murphy versus Jessica Andrade. We got Paul Craig coming in versus Johnny Walker. That's pretty good.
This is a pretty good card.
We got the aforementioned Shogun Hua making his retirement fight against somebody I don't even know.
Is this a retirement fight? Because his last fight was his retirement fight.
I don't know. Supposedly, that's what they say. And we've got, you know, a host of other fights making up a decent undercard. Let's talk about the highlights here near the main event from the top of the prelims, though. What do you want to start with, sir?
Let's start with Paul Craig and Johnny Walker. I think that's a really good fight.
That is a solid fight. Johnny Walker's in dire need of a victory here.
Yeah.
I mean, just looking at his last few fights, he needs W's in a bad way.
Yeah. Paul Craig looked great in his last fight, too.
Spectacular. So, Paul Craig's underrated, in my
very,
opinion.
Very, very underrated fighter. His submission game is top notch, and he can hang on the feet too.
He can hang on the feet, and he's actually got some power on the feet too.
Yeah,
and you cannot f with him on the ground.
Yeah,
I actually got him here. I think he's gonna fuck Johnny Walker up, unfortunately.
But I think Johnny Walker's biggest X factor in not only this fight but his career as a whole, he has that wildness that sometimes he can goad you into these crazy exchanges where he does have pretty good accuracy and some power as well. That's kind of where I feel like he finds his most success. So I think if Craig's able to take him down and handle him in the grappling aspects, I think the striking. He just needs to take it out of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Take it out of the game. I'll probably take Craig also.
Lauren Murphy, Jessica Andrade. Jessica needs the win here. This is a flyweight. You know, Murphy is a veteran. So is Jessica. Murphy's older.
Yeah.
Jessica, I think, has got the fire going on right now. And honestly, since we met her at UFC X, I just found myself more of a fan. Like, she was such a fucking nice person.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to gauge across the TV, especially when you're seeing them under circumstances where they're fighting, yeah. They're focused, and a lot of them have to get angry, they're about to deal in violence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to tell what kind of person they are outside of the cage. She's just was fucking super cool. So I'm just going to fanboy out and Jessica on this over Lauren. Lauren's a tough out, but I like Jessica Andrade for the victory here.
Yeah, me too. So this next fight, I think, is kind of a strange one. So we got Gilbert Burns taking on Neil Magny. I think this is a very weird fight for Gilbert Burns because I think he is in a very limbo position inside of this division.
Gilbert needs Leon to win in London. He could probably get a title shot with a victory.
I just don't really feel like he needs this fight versus Neil Magny. I feel like this a win versus Gilbert Burns does so much more for Neil Magny than a win for Gilbert over Neil.
It almost feels like a stay busy fight for Gilbert Burns. No shade to Neil. But
Neil's a tough out, though. That should be it's a tough fight. Don't get me wrong. I just don't understand it rankings-wise for Gilbert Burns.
I think it's a stay-busy fight, honestly. I think he just wanted that smoke.
So I think he's like 2 and Magny's like 10th.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Something like that.
I like Burns, the victory.
Yeah, I do too.
Gilbert's really tough. Neil's always a good fighter. He puts on a good show, but I don't think he has quite the... what it's needed to beat an elite fighter like Gilbert Burns.
Yeah, Burns coming off that win versus Wonderboy also. So, you know, he's just like, he's really just a, like you were saying, kind of a win away from a title shot. But welterweight has such a weird queue of guys that are pretty much ready for a title shot that who knows when he'll get one. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I like Gilbert also. All right, so let's talk about it. The 50th time. Davidson Figueiredo versus Brandon Moreno.
I get annoyed with this fight because, to me, I think the UFC is just... I think they're only high on Brandon Moreno for one reason, and I just find it gross. And I think the reason is obvious when you listen to the joke I fucking made a minute ago.
Yeah.
Because there's like a serious truth behind it.
Yeah.
And I think they're just trying to bank off... They think he's the key to Mexican viewership. And they're going to sell more pay-per-views in Mexico, and they're going to get people in America of Mexican descent to spend more money to the UFC if this guy is champ. And that's why every time they say his name, they say he's going to be the first Mexican-born champ, or he was the first. Like, they don't say that shit about Francis being the first Nigerian-born champ every time they fucking utter his name, do they?
No.
They don't talk about Conor being the first Irish champ every time they utter his name, do they?
No.
Fuck no. And, like, I think it's gross. Like, they're not trying to be respectful to his culture or his heritage. Nah, homies, y'all looking to earn that buck.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, I'm, like, enough already. And I think that, honestly, I swear to God, if he doesn't win this fight, he's just got to go beat one other person. They're going to give him another title shot.
Yeah.
It's not his fault. But Jesus, man.
I do think all these fights have been fucking bonkers. All three.
They're great fights.
They're great fights.
At some point, you just got to move on, don't you?
I agree.
This is it, right? This is the last time, irregardless of who wins. They're not going to fucking do this again, are they?
I don't know. So, just looking at it, it's kind of like the same thing we had with Wilder and Fury. Like how many times can you run that back? You know what I mean?
Three makes sense. A trilogy is like this given thing.
Yeah. But there was 4 of those, too. Oh, there's 3 because Tyson won both times. But this one has been like one of the things where they traded wins. You know what I mean? You had Figueiredo and him. They had that weird draw the first time. It was weird because they had that illegal knee and like there was some weird stuff going on. So then you go to the second fight where Brandon Moreno storms the gates and chokes Figueiredo out quick. And everyone was like, holy shit, how did that just happen? Then the third fight kind of was more of like the first fight again, where it was like mostly Figueiredo landing big shots and Moreno just being game enough to be in it the entire time and trade with him. And so I don't really know what to make of this fight. Like, there's just been two major, like, extremes on both sides in the three fights that they've had. Because I thought Figueiredo, outside of him getting a point taken away, wins the first fight. The second fight, I don't know what the fuck happened. Literally, it was so quick that Moreno just went in there, tagged him, like, six times, took him down, choked the life out of him. And nobody saw that coming. Then in the third fight was just like the first fight, though. Like, I thought more of the exchanges were won by Figueiredo, and then Moreno was just scoring with his punches but never really hurting Davison. Like, he was...
Yeah, Davison seems to be... Well, he's bigger. He seems stronger and more sturdy. But, look, I like both these guys. I think it'll be an entertaining fight. They've all been entertaining. It's not...
Yeah.
Again, these fighters fight. They're doing what they do, and they want to win titles. And, there's another aspect I think that's going to play into this fight, though, is Brandon Moreno had just moved his camp to Glory MMA.
Yep, I was going
to
say that earlier.
James Krause,
yeah.
Which, you know, unless you're not really into MMA and you haven't any listened to the show, you're most likely aware of the betting scandal where that gym has been shut down, it's been sold. If no fighters trained by James Krause are even allowed to compete in the UFC right now. So he is like, it just moved there. Now his fucking shit's all fucked up. Like, his camp, his home base, everything is in limbo. He's moving about. That has to play some effect on what's happening here.
Because I thought that was why he looked so great in the Kai Kara France fight, was under James Krause. I feel like he looked like a different fighter in that fight with Kai Kara France in his last one.
Yeah, he really did. He looked great, man.
Like, he just looked like he was on a whole new level.
Dude, Glory MMA was legit. I don't talk about their whatever's going on with their betting shit, but I mean, as far as training fighters, the fighters seem to have improvement working under Krause.
Absolutely.
It's really unfortunate this whole thing has happened like this.
Yeah. So, with that being said, who do you got?
Figueiredo. I think that there's too much going on.
In what fashion?
Decision. I think with everything that's going on, it's just going to take a toll on Moreno. It's chaos. It's not his fault. But I'm going with Figueiredo. I think his size and his power is going to be the deciding factor. I think he's going to take some of that gas off of Brandon, and that's how it's going to go.
Just for the sake of being a contrarian, I will take Brandon Moreno. Because I do think the same. I think Figueiredo is a power thing, and also, you know, Moreno being all over the place, kind of, it hurts when you're trying to be a fucking world champion. You got to be tapped in 100%, ready to go. And for there to be turmoil like that in the middle of your camp, getting ready to fucking fight somebody you've lost to and have had, you know, so much history with, that could fuck with you.
Yeah.
I think that it's going to be tough for Moreno to win this fight, but fuck it. I'm taking Moreno by decision.
All right. Well, let's wrap the 283 talk with the final main event, which, you know, unfortunately due to the injury to, Yuri, we've got Teixeira getting Jamal Hill on short notice. Jamal is, 10-1?
11-1? I think so, something like that.
And he's represents the up-and-comers in the division for sure. This is his big moment to take out a legend. Glover is, 43, 44?
Something like that.
This should be very interesting. It's tentative that this is happening, supposedly, in Rio de Janeiro. This whole thing could possibly fall apart with all the political turmoil that's going. Let's keep our fingers crossed that that doesn't happen as far as this goes, speaking from a fight fan perspective only. I don't know. How many times does Teixeira have what it takes to beat one of these fucking young guns?
Yeah. And honestly, I think Jamal Hill's style has also been one of those kind of styles that Glover has been exposed by in the past. Like, Glover carries some solid power and always been known as like a real big power puncher. But when he fights other power punchers, he does struggle. Or not necessarily always, but he has sometimes in the past.
Yeah.
And I also feel like Jamal Hill's body style also is like, you know, similar to someone like Jones, where he's a very long guy and he keeps people on the ends of his punches. And I think that could spell danger for someone like Glover.
Yeah, I think Hill's going to most likely knock him out. I love Glover Teixeira. He's a legend. I mean, if you think about how long those of us that have grown up in watched the UFC for so long. We were hearing about this guy way back when Chuck Liddell was champ, his legendary training partner that couldn't get the visa.
Yeah.
You know, and now all these years later, we're still hearing about him, but I just think this is it. This is his swan song. I wish he'd get the victory in a way because that's a nice end to your story. But I think that what's going to happen is in front of this home crowd, he's going to get KO'd. And honestly, this is the best thing for the division, too. I hate to sound harsh, but
Jamal's a real, like, marketable guy, too. He does real great social media. He's good on the mic. And I loved what he had to say on Errol Hawani's show before, when they announced his fight, was he's like, where he comes from, like, kids his age don't get to see, get a chance to be great. And, like, he just wants a chance to, like, find out if he's good enough to be great. And that's, like, that's some deep shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's fucking, that's huge. And, like, I love a good underdog story. You know, like, someone who comes from, you know, nothing and make something of themselves, like, that's
like
big.
Like Francis.
You know, like Francis, yeah, earlier, Francis. Sure. And Jamal he's is a nice young, story too. He's well, only, what, 27, 26, something like that? So, yeah, I love it. I'm taking Jamal Hill by knockout.
All right, well, that wraps 283. And before we wrap the show, there's one final major event that has taken place in MMA that we'd be remiss not to talk about, frankly, although the topic is getting kind of slapped around a bit.
I fucking hate you so much.
Oh, that was in poor taste. I know. But we're talking about the slap heard around the world, at least the MMA world, which is Dana White and his wife.
Yeah.
Normally we wouldn't talk about said private business, but this happened out in public, and TMZ came out with a video.
Yeah.
And unless you're living under a rock, you know that Dana slapped his wife. And from what I understand, my knowledge, this could be slightly incorrect, but most of the video that we've seen is only one instance. If you watch the whole thing, it's basically, you know, they're arguing in a nightclub. She goes to leave. He grabs her wrists, which she slaps him afterwards. And then he slaps her. And some videos kind of end there. And another one shows an additional slap and him shoving her to the ground as well. Now, he came out, which is really odd about this whole thing, Paul, is, you know, TMZ, when they broke this story, they already had statements from White, which is unusual to say the least.
Well, he knows what he did.
Yes, but how often do they go to the celebrity and be like, hey, would you like to defend yourself before we break the story? I mean, when Floyd beat his girl, before they broke that, did they go to Floyd and say, hey, can you give us your side so when we say what happened, you're right here to defend yourself immediately afterwards? I'm just saying.
Yeah.
When John Jones gets that shit, do they treat him that way?
No. I think someone like Dana White, though, is so tapped in with what's going to happen in the media that he probably did that shit, called the PR team at the UFC right away and told them that happened.
That's a damn good point. Yeah,
like, I guarantee it. I guarantee that he then immediately called WME, Ari Emanuel, whoever, like, their representatives were, and were like, I fucked up. We got to do this the right way or this is going to blow up.
Well, so now let's talk about what Dana did afterwards, which is, basically, he said all the right things.
Yeah.
He came out. He said that he shouldn't have done it. He said it hadn't happened before. He said he was wrong. He said it's a family matter that he's going to have to deal with. He was embarrassed. And then he came out a second time and made another statement where he was, like, asking people to please not defend him. And that's not really where the controversy is coming, though, from, is it, Paul? I mean, there's a controversy behind the act, but it's not Dana's words that are causing the controversy afterwards. People are like, okay, good.
It's the lack of fucking accountability.
There's
that
no punishment here.
Yeah, that he has, like, here's the thing. He's taken accountability, like, vocally and, like, in the media. But as far as, like, punishment from WME, there is none.
Yeah,
which
Endeavor,
makes no
the parent
fucking
company,
sense to me. Nothing. Because I guarantee you that and this is kind of why I truly feel that, like, people on the outside of the MMA space look at MMA and go, yeah, that's, like, for the wild, like people who are really on the wild side of things, like, it. That's always been the narrative, like, around, like, it's not MMA, it's cage fighting, you know what I mean? Like, you watch people get in their underwear and fight in a cage, dude, are you fucking crazy? Yeah, when their fucking commissioner is out here smacking his wife around and calling his fighters shit and not paying them shit, and treating them so unprofessionally himself, and then also, in turn, handling himself in the public eye, and from what it seems also in his private life so poorly as well. Like, there's this narrative that you have now smeared onto the UFC that anybody who has, that you had built any legitimacy with, will now look at you like, yeah, I fucking knew it, one day you were just going to trip and fall. And that's what he's done to this company. And now, well, WME needs to do something about it.
Well, yes, because Dana seems to think that's enough. And he's not going to punish himself.
No.
WME has refused to even comment. Endeavor has refused to comment, which I find interesting. Because, like, Ari, the lead guy over there, he sure had a lot to say about shit like Kanye West, who was not signed to them, who said horrible things. But, I mean... You made a statement about that. Like, your main guy over here just beat up his fucking wife. I don't care what you say on fucking TV. You're not going to, like, say anything? You're not going to be like, we condemn those actions? Like, we're against domestic violence? Like, the most basic of statements, condemning domestic violence. Not on crickets. Crickets from ESPN as a company. Some hosts have gone out and said some things, and some have softballed him, like Stephen A. Smith, who has just made every excuse in the world about how he's a goddamn leader of men and this and that and whatever. Okay. Yeah. And now there's a host of fighters who have this, and other people who have this interesting argument that say, well, because she slapped him first, it's all right that then he in turn slapped her back, which is just this whole thing that to me
will never be an argument that I want to get into, because it's just not even fathomable that you're going to put your hands on a woman. Like, dude, like, all right, so I think that about wraps the show up for today, then.
Yeah, for real this time. I do want to send a thanks to our sponsor for this episode, Binoid. You can check out all of their marvelous CBD and hemp-derived cannabinoid products that are legal in all 50 states by going to our website and clicking the Cool Stuff button and following those links. Paul, where else can they find that stuff?
You can also head over there and click the gear button and support the podcast, buy a t-shirt, then head over to Instagram. And then follow us at SWAT MMA Podcast and Twitter.
We appreciate it, everybody.
Peace.
Later.